This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Alan Ellis here. This is the Outdoorsman Radio Show, and this is the first day of the youth wild turkey season. This show is pre-recorded, but we've got a couple of good guests for you here. First up this hour is Tracy Groves, a friend of mine who's been very involved in turkey hunting, and he screwed up a couple opportunities for me to take a bird by his calling and when we've been in the blind, but... What?
I said, you're right.
You're right. But Tracy's here with us this morning to talk a little turkey hunting, which comes in for the rest of us on April 18th. So if you're headed out with the kids today, pay attention because you'll have a great time talking to, listening to Tracy talk. And then following Tracy in the second hour, we've got Harry Hornick coming with the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We're a week out from the big trophy rockfish season, striped bass season. And Harry's the guy that handles all the science on the striped bass season. So we're going to talk about a lot of good stuff here this morning, and we hope you'll enjoy the show. Since we are pre-recorded, no phone calls today, so you will be able to hear the podcast. However, if you're have to go in the woods or something like that, as always on ellisoutdoors.com or on the wcbm.com website. So good morning, Tracy.
Good morning, Alan. How you doing?
I'm doing great. This is a couple of days before the youth season. Of course, we're recording this, and you're telling me right now the turkeys are where they should be.
I believe they are. They're, turkeys that go through three transitional phases in their breeding cycle: transition 1, 2, and 3. And from what I've been seeing and hearing, I think they're in transition 1, which means for the youth kids, it's going to be absolutely perfect.
Perfect day. It usually is this time of year, though. I mean, a little earlier for the kids, they seem to do pretty well. They hear a lot of birds. They see a lot of birds. And you're headed from here where?
I'm heading to our camp at Heartwood Outdoors Outreach Center in Big Pool, Maryland, to get ready for our – we have a junior camp for turkey hunters this week. We start on Wednesday, and the kids come in on Wednesday. We have a meet and greet today, and then we have all kind of activities Thursday and Friday, and then go shoot them up on Saturday.
Now, last year you had a pretty successful time. If I remember, you got three birds last year.
We had three opportunities,
two birds.
Two birds were harvested, and one young man got a little excited and missed. But I actually went out with that young man 2 weeks later. We took him out again to in his home state of West Virginia, and we got him a bird then.
Oh, good. That's great. That's wonderful.
I think the reason that the kids are so successful is because normally in the state of Maryland, you don't get an opportunity to see all three phases of the transitions that turkeys go through. We always see transition 2 and 3.
Can happen that quickly.
Oh, absolutely.
In a week, yeah.
10 to 12 days is those transitions.
Okay.
And so what happens is with the youth season, they get an opportunity to see all three transitions. You're in transition 1. Which the best time to harvest a bird, or I should say the easiest time to harvest a bird is in transition 1 and in transition 3.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now those birds are in transition 1, and that's why a lot of the kids are so successful.
What are they transitioning from to in, as far as the breeding season, the life cycle of a turkey? So, I mean, we've just come out of the winter, the snow, the rain, and all that. And, I mean, I've seen birds in the wintertime in flocks, hens and gobblers together. I've seen gobblers fighting, as in December, January. But what's going on right now in the turkey woods?
Right now in at least the western part of the state, it will change a little bit day to day depending on, like, the eastern shore and then central Maryland, Carroll County, and then western Maryland. Right now the birds are still together. So they're still in their bachelor groups. The gobblers are all still together. The hens are still together, and the jakes are still together. And so what happens is, it won't be very long. Those gobblers are going to start gathering their harem. And when they start to break up, when those birds start to break up, each one of those gobblers will go and start to gather their own harem.
Is that transition one?
That's transition one.
That's where we are now. The gobblers are actively gobbling and searching for hens.
They're just getting ready to start that. I actually didn't hear my first bird gobble until last Thursday.
That was 10 days ago from today's broadcast, pretty much.
Pretty much, that's correct. Okay. Now, Last year, mm-hmm. my first bird gobbled on March the 15th, and they were already breeding on March the 26th, and they were already laying poults by April 25th, 26th.
Really?
So this year, and people think that our breeding season is behind, but it's not. It's actually right where, it's just my opinion, it's right where it should be.
Right.
The last 2 years, because we've had such early warm springs, the birds just started breeding early.
They started breeding earlier,
But according to our weather and everything, it's right where it should be for our area. So the birds are just now starting to break up. The gobblers are starting to search for their harem, which means the calling is more effective because they're going to try to gather those harems up and start to protect them. They're starting to establish their pecking order, who's the boss gobbler, so it should be good.
I've seen the birds I've seen traveling primarily on the shore. I mean, you know, just this week, saw birds with mixed bunches of birds, but the gobblers are all strutting. I mean, they're all puffed up, and they're displaying, and I guess they're, like you said, establishing their pecking order. You know, my tail fin's bigger than your tail fin, basically.
Yeah.
You know.
Last Friday I was out, and I put a lot of miles on the legs here since last Thursday because they just started gobbling.
Right.
You've got to figure out, you know, what they're doing and where they're roosting and what they're doing when they hit the ground. And last Friday, the birds were gobbling on their own up until 11 o'clock.
O'clock in the morning.
Was phenomenal. I couldn't.
Well, I'm seeing birds mid-afternoon. That's what I mean, early afternoon, you know, like right afternoon up to 1, 2 o'clock.
So. Yeah, and there's a lot of people are confused about, they keep calling me and say, hey, the birds are breeding because they're strutting. Well, turkeys strut all year round.
Right, yes.
What happens is they start to display themselves more in fields, so people have an opportunity to see them strutting more. Now, they do strut more during the breeding, but they strut all winter. But what happens is they go to fields so that they can strut, so they can display themselves, so they can show off for the hens. So it allows us as hunters the opportunity to see them, you know, more regularly.
I was deer hunting in Dorchester County a number of years ago with one of our listeners, actually, Bob. And Bob will remember this because he and I were in tree stands a couple hundred yards apart. I could see where he was sitting, but I couldn't see him. He could see me. I was out on a point. And I had a few birds coming in, a few turkeys coming in. I think I saw 12 or 13 that day. And the gobblers were all fighting and scratching each other, rolling over on their backs and flailing their feet at each other. They're trying to spurs each other. And they walked right underneath me. And I looked over, every time I looked over at his field where he was sitting, there were more birds and more birds and more birds. And I said to him, Bob, I don't know how many birds. I couldn't even count them. How many were in the field? He goes, 80.
Yeah, 80.
we saw 96 birds that day.
Yeah.
If his count was accurate.
I've seen something for the very first time I've ever seen in my life last 2 weeks ago in the western part of Maryland. There was 18 longbeards. I'm not talking about jakes. I'm talking about mature birds. 18 longbeards all together in one group, and they were all strutting at the same time.
That's pretty cool.
And that is an awesome sight, and especially in Maryland. I mean, if you go to a place like South Dakota or Oklahoma, you know, things like that, you could see that. But to see that in Maryland, that's special. And that tells us that our turkey population is doing really well here in the state of Maryland.
Yes, it is. And it's doing so well, you probably have heard this or maybe not. They've just passed a regulation now. They brought this up in the stakeholders meeting. They brought it up in the public meetings. They proposed a winter turkey season. I don't know if you've heard this or not. Statewide, they wanted to do it the last week of January. Mm-hmm. And they got some pushback, a little pushback from the deer hunters and baiting and that type of thing. So they actually did pass a regulation. It's going to be a 3-day season, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, ending on the last Saturday of January every year. Just another opportunity.
Yeah, I think what the problem is, Alan, is that there's not very many fall turkey hunters.
Correct.
So there's not enough opportunity to harvest the hens.
Right.
And that's where we're at, is our population of hens is getting out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, a lot of the guys, instead of fall hunting turkey, they're deer hunting.
Right.
Or they're squirrel hunting. And so we're not harvesting an amount of hens that we need. But the good side of that is, If a hen lays an average of 11 to 12 eggs, which is what they do, normally about 3 of them are gobblers.
Right.
And if an average hen lays 12 eggs, normally only 7 to 8 of them actually survive.
Right.
So if you look at those numbers, our gobblers because of the way that our how many hens we have, our gobblers have been able to really increase, and it's been good. But we are getting out of control with the hens.
Well, we've got so much private land where people don't hunt. We've got so much closed land that the it's perfect for turkeys because they're not hunted. You've got just a tremendous amount of ground that turkeys are just basically left alone because guys are deer hunting.
Right.
And especially in the fall, I mean, obviously, Western Maryland is open for about a week up there in Western Maryland. And, there are some guys up there. They don't kill a lot of birds in the fall, though, a couple hundred.
They don't. Yeah, they don't.
A couple hundred.
But one of the things we do is that because of the TV media and TV shows, deer hunting is the number one thing.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody in turkey hunting is a lot more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times what happens is guys will get a little frustrated after that first week.
Sure.
And they quit. And so we're not harvesting number of birds. But now, I mean, I'll tell you what, the state of Maryland has come a long way in the last 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm. So talking to some of the fellows that are – they've been hunting a long time, and they're saying, we didn't have deer back in the 60s and 70s coming up. He said, we hunted small – I mean, I'm talking to different guys. We hunted small game. We had pheasants. We had quail. We had squirrel. We hunted rabbits. Everybody had rabbit dogs. Everybody had a bird dog, that was the thing. And then when the deer started coming in, people started slowly moving to deer hunting, and as the deer herd
population
started to increase, more people went deer hunting. The clean farming practices came in, the quail went down, the pheasants went down. Not everybody decided they wanted to continue to hunt rabbits, and the cover got cut up a little bit because of the advent of clean farming, so to speak.
Yeah.
And we just kind of transitioned into deer, and then, of course, the advent of the growing turkey season, everybody got jacked up about turkeys. Now we got everything except the small game.
If you're going to, of course, we're pre-recording the show, but if you're going to hunt today in transition one, I just call soft and don't get real aggressive.
For the kids now.
Yeah, you're not going to have to get too aggressive, I don't think. I mean, every day changes with the turkey was, rule number one to turkey hunting is there is no rules.
No rules, right.
Yeah. So just go out and enjoy it. But I'll tell you what, there ain't nothing better than watching the sunrise and hearing a turkey gobble.
Oh, my. You ain't kidding, especially when they start getting closer. So, okay. So let's wait till the next segment and we'll talk about calling and the types of calling that you can do and the ground blind with the kids and that type of thing. But that is the key. I mean, somebody's unless the youngster knows how to call and has been practicing, you're more than likely going to have an adult in the ground blind or sitting in the woods and doing some soft calling and trying to locate the gobblers and get them coming to you.
Yeah, and one thing this year you're going to have to really be careful of, too, is that there's no leaves on the trees.
No leaves is right.
So it's going to be very difficult. What we have set up for our kids this weekend is I have two ground blinds set, and then I build a natural ground blind on some public ground because we're going to have the fathers. We'll be with them, so there'll be three of us plus a cameraman on some of the hunts, so there'll be four.
Yeah.
It's going to be really difficult, but just movement is the key, especially right now. And I think if anybody makes a mistake this weekend, it's going to be trying to get too close.
Too close.
Because the birds are going to be able to see a lot further. There's
right.
no leaves at all. Now, I'm pushing the envelope on the young man that's going to be hunting on public ground because I got where that bird's roosting, I got a ground blind set up about 100 yards from where he's going to be. So he's got to get in there like a church mouse. But if it does, it should turn out to be really good.
That will be great. That will be great. So, well, we'll talk more about the calling techniques here in the next segment, as I mentioned. But, if you're out there listening, the kids are listening, I hope they're excited. I hope they patterned their shotguns and they're ready to go to take that big tom turkey. And, of course, any bird with a beard is legal.
Correct.
Even hens. And
correct.
About 1 out of 10 hens or something like that have a beard or maybe a little?
Yeah, it's a little more than that. I mean, it's a little less than that.
Less than that.
Yeah. But don't feel bad to harvest that hen with a beard. It's quite a trophy. I know there's a lot of guys out there that say you shouldn't do it, but I've done it twice, and there's nothing wrong with our hen population's in good shape, and it's quite a trophy.
Yep. If you're headed to the Eastern Shore today, don't forget about Chesapeake Outdoors. They're your headquarters for fishing and hunting supplies. Of course, you've got the big rockfish season coming up, and they've got all the rods and reels and tackle, and they'll fill your trolling reel with line and that type of thing right before the big season. They've got the Spank and Stripers baits. Yep, those are bucktails and parachutes by a local company called Spank and Stripers. They're really nice, and they're promoting them. And they also have those great big mojos for stripers, too, and I'm talking about big umbrella rigs that are 16, 20, and 24 ounces in custom colors. If you like to keep and eat, you know, fillet and release your fish, they've got the Bubba Blade knives for you, and, of course, everything for turkey hunting, from shotguns to zinc calls and AVNX decoys. Why not stop by Chesapeake Outdoors, Route 50 east of the Bay Bridge, exit 39B on Kent Island. That's Dominion Road. Give them a call, 410-604-2500, 410-604-2500, or stop in and say hi to the guys. If you enjoy decoy collecting and great wildlife art, waterfowl hunting, or a scenic walk along the bay, it's time for the 33rd Annual Decoy and Wildlife Art Festival at the Havre de Grace Decoy Museum. This year's event is Friday evening, May 2nd, Saturday, May 3rd, and Sunday, May 4th. Admission is only $8 for the weekend. Over 120 exhibitors and artists display paintings and prints, sculptures and carvings, photography, and sportsman's collectibles. The family-friendly festival has great food and lots to see and do. The annual live auction is 5:30 p.m. on Saturday at the Activity Center. Free shuttle buses run between the museum, the middle school, and the Activity Center. Learn about the great hunting traditions of the Chesapeake Bay at the Decoy and Wildlife Art Festival at the Havre de Grace Decoy Museum on May 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. For more information, visit decoymuseum.com or call 410-939-3739. See you at the Decoy Festival. It's time for the 2014 Maryland Fishing Challenge. You could win great prizes like the grand prize boat motor and trailer rig from Bass Pro Shop or thousands in tackle from Bill's Outdoor Center and prizes from sponsors like the World Fishing Network and Under Armour. New this year is an invasive species award for those catching blue catfish, flathead catfish, and northern snakeheads. And check out the new Maryland Youth Fishing Club and the Youth Angler's Log to learn how your youngster can win a guided fishing trip. From now through Labor Day, all you have to do is go fishing. If you're lucky enough to catch a Maryland citation-sized fish or crab and certify your catch, you're in. It's that easy. There are more than 60 species of fish in freshwater, tidal rivers, Chesapeake Bay, and on the Atlantic coast that qualify. So stop by your local fishing citation center, check the fishing rule book, or visit www.dnr.maryland.gov for all the details in the 2014 Maryland Fishing Challenge and the Angler Award Program. That's www.dnr.maryland.gov. Are you feeling lucky? For great fishing tackle, crabbing supplies, and up-to-date fishing and crabbing information, hey, it's Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena. To get there, take Route 100 to the end, hop on Mountain Road towards Gibson Island, go 2.5 miles to 4729 Mountain Road. Custom-tied bucktails and trolling lures for rockfish, and all you need for any type of fishing, crabbing, and the best fishing report on the mid-bay. Fishbones also carries the best stainless steel crab steamers you'll ever find. Call 410-360-0573, 410-360-0573 for Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena. This is Alan Ellis for Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex are proud to provide outstanding customer service just like their number one rated Linex spray-on bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface and is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands, tools, and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at the local car wash. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex now offer the new Linex Premium that looks better and last longer. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just up Beltway Exit 3A. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. And Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex spray-on bedliner. W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg
Borg has taken care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything. Their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
Hey, everybody. We're back. My name is Alan Ellis, and we are with Tracy Groves. Tracy, is what's your role with Mossy Oak? I know you...
I'm the regional pro staff manager. I oversee five states.
Five states. And that's for the turkey division.
Turkey division, correct.
There's somebody over that has that deer position, and then there's somebody in the waterfowl,
position.
That's pretty cool. So, and you're wearing your Mossy Oak today.
Nothing else.
Nothing else. You like it?
I do. Yeah. I'm a very big fan of Mossy Oak, but more than I'm a big fan of Toxie Hayes and what he believes in and what he gives back to the outdoors.
Okay. That's good. And he's quite a turkey hunter as well.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've got a new thing that just started. I just found out about yesterday. It's called Gamekeepers, and if you apply to become a member of the Gamekeepers, you get a free Cody call, Slate call.
Wow, that's cool.
It's pretty wild. They're going to be doing a whole TV series on Gamekeepers and managing your property,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to start from scratch on a 50-acre piece of ground and show people how you can maintain, hold, and have and raise mature whitetails on 50 acres. It's going to be a pretty interesting deal.
That's pretty good. I've got an old new writer for the Maryland Hunting Quarterly now that's doing. I just got it last night. I haven't even had a chance to read it. It's going to be a 2-part article on creating your own food plot on your property, not 50 acres. I mean, you can, but basically, he said, you can start a food plot with a lawnmower.
That's true. Yeah, I did it for years.
And he said, and this is how you're going to be able to do a low-cost, high-quality food plot. So I'm looking forward to seeing that and presenting that to
people. We could talk for hours about that. I've been involved in food plots for a long time, but I've taken on a pretty big challenge of doing a 7-acre food plot at our new outreach center. And I've gotten involved in some weed control that I have never experienced before, and I've had a couple guys out there that are farmers and that are chemists to try to figure out how to beat this thing. And this one's taking me right now, but I'm going to beat it.
It's What's just, the weed?
They can't figure out what it is. And so that's why we brought chemists in. But I frost seeded this year to try to save, and this weed, I nitroed it and fertilized it. And I did soil samples, did everything the right way. And when the snow melted, there was a whole green covering of this particular weed.
Of that weed, no kidding.
And unfortunately, we have to go back and start all over.
Wow.
And I have a lot of money tied up into that.
Yeah.
A lot of time and
I mean,
tied
did,
up
did the farm,
it.
I mean, is this just on your place or is this?
It's just on our place, yeah.
Really?
And so they're coming out. We dug up samples last week, and they're checking it out.
Nobody knows what it is.
They can't figure it quite out what it is.
You may have just discovered a new invasive species here in Maryland.
Yeah, I wish it go away because it's creating me a lot of anger.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so you're going to be in the blind today with a couple kids, and you're going to try and get them a bird. You want to get them a big old gobbler come strutting in there and get close enough to pull the trigger on.
Yeah, we do. The kids that we're going to have with us this week, we have one boy that's just a real special, special guy. His name's Cruz, and he's really fighting some serious issues right now. And I really
let's get this up front. Your outreach center is for kids that do have either special needs or their family situation isn't the point where they're able to afford to be able to go hunting and that type of thing. I mean, these are kids that need a little extra attention.
Yeah, for the most part.
For the most part.
I mean, I'd say that probably 90% of what we do is that.
Yeah.
And we do have kids that we do come in that have excelled and achieved, and
sure.
I think they deserve to have a special reward. And so both ends of the spectrum. So what we have with us today is that both ends of the spectrum. Cruz is a young 12-year-old young man that's fighting some serious stuff, and then we have a couple other young boys that have just excelled and they wanted to be rewarded,
mm-hmm.
and so they are. Mossy Oak has jumped in and donated some camos to them, and Cody Calls and Mountain Hollow Game Calls has donated some calls to them, and they get in a pretty nice package. But more than that, we just want to have a good time and hear birds gobble. But yeah, I'm going to have one of those guys with me today, and I really do hope things work out.
I know one of our listeners, John, donated a shotgun to the program last year.
Yeah, he did, and we're going to be using that. We've used it prior to now for we had a men's retreat at our outreach center a couple weeks ago, and men from the inner city that never shot a shotgun before, that's what we put in their hands because it's a little 20 gauge. And
yeah.
It's amazing what happens when you take a guy to the outdoors and how they open up and just experience things they've never experienced before.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's quite
and you and I have done it all our lives, and we look at it like, oh, man, there's a woodpecker, you know, and everybody,
yeah.
Man, there's a woodpecker. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's exactly
so,
right.
Yeah, so good. All right, so you're in the blind, and it's you know, daylight, just getting daylight, breaking daylight, and the birds are starting to wake up, and you might hear an owl, you might hear the crows starting, and then you're going to try and entice a big old gobbler to call. How are you going to do that?
You know, for me, Alan, over the years, I used to hit a crow call and an owl hoot first thing in the morning all the time to try to entice that bird. I've changed a little bit of that. What I do is I spend more time trying to let the birds go natural and let them start to gobble first. And if it's almost completely daylight and they haven't started to gobble, then I'll try to entice them. But what I do is I just let them try to go on their own. You know, I don't use any crow call anymore in the morning. No owl call in the morning. I try to let them go natural.
And well, then they're going to wake up and start gobbling anyway this time of year. I
mean,
that's their goal, right?
Yeah, they should.
Yeah.
So that's natural to them. And then once I hear that first gobble, then I'll start. First, I get pretty jacked up because I know I got a bird that I can work.
Right.
And then I'll just let him gobble a few times, and then I'll give him a soft tree yelp just to let him know that I'm there.
Because he's in a tree now.
He's in a tree.
He's roosting. He's calling from an elevated position to let the hens know where he is. Because the goal is for the gobbler to get those hens underneath him to come to him.
Right. The whole thing is you have to understand that the course of nature is that the bird gobbles. The hens fly down, the hens go to him, and then he flies down.
Okay.
So that's the course of nature. So what you do is as he gobbles, if you give him a couple of soft tree yelps, and you're just real soft, he can hear that tree yelp from probably 150 to 200 yards away, especially this time of year.
Right.
You just acknowledge to him that you're there. He knows where you're at. And like most men, after a while, we'll get frustrated because she won't come to us, and
right.
Then he'll fly down and come to her.
Right.
So that's the whole key is probably one of the biggest mistakes that guys make is that they, as soon as they hear that first bird gobble, they get
excited.
They
start working them, yeah.
And they try to start working them really hard, and they get them all fired up, and that don't do it. Now, during transition three, you could probably do that because he's ready to breed. He wants to be there, and he's going to come, but right now.
And that's the last 2 weeks, 10 days of the season, right?
Yeah, normally it's the last week of the season.
Okay.
I always harvest.
And we're also able to hunt all day during those.
That's correct.
That time. Yeah.
I normally harvest my best bird of the year in that last 2 to 3 days. Last year was the last day of the season,
mm-hmm.
And the birds were just tearing it up. Now, it didn't gobble off the roost, but that's for different reasons. People walking through the woods and all, but the last couple of days is really normally good.
Okay.
So it's soft tree yelps, real soft. Here's just a example of what I call a tree yelp.
Now, this is a slate call, right?
This is a slate call. I don't use a mouth call first thing in the morning anymore. I used to.
Right.
But now I use a slate just to wake them up. And then when they hit the ground, then I'll switch over to a mouth call. But just a tree yelp, just a real saw. That's it.
That's it. You're only moving that striker.
Yeah.
You're only moving that striker a quarter of an inch.
Quarter inch, yeah. It's hard to believe a bird can hear that probably close to 150, 200 yards away.
That is unbelievable. Yeah. But given the excellent hearing and sight and everything else of a wild turkey, it's pretty amazing.
It is.
You know, yeah. I mean, that's what they're used to. That's what
it
they
is.
Do. I mean, there's all the other birds going off. There's the crows and the mockingbirds and whatever else is out there. They're all going off, and you do that, and that turkey keys right in on that.
If you ever go out and listen to a turkey and don't touch the call and just listen, as the morning progresses, as the sun starts to come up, you'll hear that hen get a little bit louder and a little bit louder.
Mm-hmm.
But her first thing in the morning is that just real soft, hey, I'm awake.
Yeah.
Go, hey, I'm here. And then as she's getting ready to fly down, then she gets a little bit louder mm-hmm. and a little bit louder. And then she'll fly down, and then she'll do a normal sequence. You know, but like I said, rule number one, turkey hunting, there is no rules.
No rules, right.
But yeah. I learned that, you know, I spent some time with Mark Koch, who I think is a phenomenal turkey hunter.
Yes, he is.
And I learned a lot from him, too, is that you – when you understand the transitions, you understand how to call to a bird. Mm-hmm. You know, when the birds are in transition two, which is when they're henned up, a lot of guys will go out there and they'll just call and call and they'll get real loud. That's completely the opposite of what you want to do when the birds are henned up. When a bird is henned up, you want to be soft and just super quiet, because if you ever listen to a bird walk through the woods, it's that real soft, yep. It's just real super soft. And a hen don't go through the woods being real loud.
Right.
And I don't think most people understand how good a turkey's hearing is. So when we get loud, man, it's like 10 times that to them.
Mm-hmm.
So when the birds are, you know, Mark does a really good job of like harvesting birds when they're henned up. And the reason is because he doesn't get too aggressive. It's real soft calls, and it's a lot of patience. And I've learned that from, you know, from hunting with him. And when you learn those transitions, you learn how to call in those transitions, and you'll be a much more successful hunter.
There you go. All right. So now we've got some time here, a little bit of time. Now you've made that tree call. You've got a gobbler located.
Yep.
Okay. So he's over here. How are you going to get him to come to you? Now you've gone through all this. You know the hens are on the ground. You know he's on the ground. Okay. Yeah. What's the next step?
So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to respond off of what he's doing.
So you've got him. You've got his attention with this tree call.
Yeah, he knows I'm there.
Right.
And whenever he responds to you.
Yeah. How often? I mean, do you keep doing the tree call?
No. I do that in a morning. Let's say in 12 to 13 minutes, I might do that 3 or 4 times.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah.
And once he acknowledges me.
Yeah.
He knows what tree I'm sitting next to.
Okay.
He knows exactly where I'm at.
Okay.
So there's no reason to continue to do it.
Right.
You know, now if I have a hen around me
mm-hmm.
and she's in a tree, you know, yelping or tree putting, I'll imitate her. And so when she calls, I'll call. When she calls, I'll call. And then you just, when they hit the ground, I'll go into a little bit of a yelp series.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully it's enough to entice them to come check you out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So what I do is, and again, it's not over aggressive. If you feed off of him, if he gobbles every time you touch the call, then you can get away with being a little bit more aggressive. But if you call, he gobbles, and then, you know, you go 4 to 5 minutes and he don't gobble again, you know, then just stay soft. He knows where you're at. And the problem is we sit there and I watch, I time, you know, because what happens is, you know, as we get excited, you know, 30 seconds.
Seems like a forever.
Seems like eternity,
yeah.
Right? And so we want to keep calling. Well, that's the wrong thing to do.
Right.
Most of the time, it's the wrong thing to do.
Right.
It's not real often. There's a very short period of time in the turkey woods where you can just lay into them and they just come, you know.
Right.
I call that the breaking point. Sometimes you have to really go at them to get them fired up to come, but it doesn't work normally. So,
all right. So we're in the woods today. You've made your tree call. You've got the bird responding.
Well, let me loosen up the reeds a little bit.
All right. Take a dry call and put it in your mouth and try to perform on the radio. That's.
That sounds completely different on radio.
Yeah, it will. Yeah, it will.
So just now, real soft tree yelps.
That's a yelp.
Yep, real soft tree yelps, and then just kind of leave it at that.
And leave it go there.
If you want to make it sound like there's more than one bird, then do your tree yelp along with the...
No, wait a minute. Now he's got to put a mouth call in and work the slate at the same time. Now, I've heard Mark Hoke blow a goose call, and he sounds like 14 geese coming in.
Yeah, I can't do that. Yeah.
Can't do that with turkeys, though, huh?
Now, that call there was a zinc mouth call.
Okay.
The call there was a zinc mouth call, and it And it's a, you know, it's a very soft read.
Right.
So every mouth call is a little bit different.
You got to learn which one you like. Okay. Yep. And there's different ones for different situations. We'll talk about that in a minute. But right now it's time for me to tell the folks where to get the gun to kill a turkey, and that would be Clyde Sports Shop. The Browning BPS pump, the bottom ejection, it's the only shotgun with bottom ejection. It comes in 12 and 10-gauge models. It has the DuraTouch armor coating with the Mossy Oak Breakup Infinity, which is a great camo finish. Comes with three Invector Plus choke tubes in them. Not only that, they've got the Maxis, which we've talked about here, which is a semi-automatic firearm. It's for, you know, anything you want. 3 and 3.5-inch chambers is great for waterfowl. And of course, my favorite, the A5, which I will own one of these days, is the new A5 that comes in a couple of different models, in the black and the wood grain and in the camo. It's 100,000 rounds or a 5-year guarantee. That's a pretty good shotgun. Don't forget about that. So Clyde Sports Shop, they're your headquarters for not only firearms, but everything you need for fishing. They have rockfish season coming up. They've got that. Why not stop by 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway exit number 9. The phone number there is 410-242-6108. Website is ClydeSports.com. And don't forget that 24-hour fishing hotline for all you fishermen out there. Best fishing advice you can find, 410-247-3474. That's 247-FISH. All that at Clyde's Sports Shop. We'll be right back after this. If you enjoy decoy collecting and great wildlife art, waterfowl hunting, or a scenic walk along the bay, it's time for the 33rd Annual Decoy and Wildlife Art Festival at the Havre de Grace Decoy Museum. This year's event is Friday evening, May 2nd, Saturday, May 3rd, and Sunday, May 4th. Admission is only $8 for the weekend. Over 120 exhibitors and artists display paintings and prints, sculptures and carvings, photography, and sportsman's collectibles. The family-friendly festival has great food and lots to see and do. The annual live auction is 5:30 p.m. on Saturday at the Activity Center. Free shuttle buses run between the museum, the middle school, and the Activity Center. Learn about the great hunting traditions of the Chesapeake Bay at the Decoy and Wildlife Art Festival at the Havre de Grace Decoy Museum on May 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. For more information, visit decoymuseum.com or call 410-939-3739. See you at the Decoy Festival. If you enjoy gardening, I always recommend Schellinger's Papa John's Farm in Severn, just off I-97. Papa John's greenhouses are bursting with beautiful plants and flowers. Annuals by the pack or flat, and perennials by the pot. Bedding plants, planters, and hanging baskets, too. Colorful pansies, impatiens, and petunias. They even carry the proven winter specialty plants. Papa John's Farm has all the vegetable plants, too, ready to plant in your home garden. Tasty tomatoes, squash, onions, watermelon, cantaloupe, 10 varieties of hot peppers and herbs, too. Papa John's Farm, just off I-97 at exit 12. That's 8029 New Cut Road in Severn. You can drive right to the greenhouses to make your selections or call 410-969-5909. Think about flowers and plants from Papa John's for your garden or for your church. Easter's April 20th. Mother's Day's coming soon, May 11th. Call 410-969-5909. Papa John's is open every day. Visit Schellinger's Papa John's Farm. It'll grow on you. This is Alan Ellis for Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie are proud to provide outstanding customer service, just like their number one rated Linex Spray-On Bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface and is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands and tools and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at your local car wash, too. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie now offer the new Linex Premium that looks better and lasts longer. Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie is located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just off Beltway Exit 3A. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex Spray-On Bedliner. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment.
Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W. Tire and Auto.
I looked down at my hands and was like, wow, I'm performing CPR on this guy. And then I actually finally met him. That was probably one of the coolest parts of my life, being able to talk to a guy after I gave him CPR.
Reed was just 17 when he heard a cry for help. Thanks to his Red Cross training, he didn't freeze, he didn't panic, he knew exactly what to do. Red Cross training saves lives. Sign up for a class today at redcross.org.
Great minds discuss ideas. Average minds discuss events. Small minds discuss people.
The Rush Limbaugh radio program.
What do we talk about on this program? We talk about ideas on this program. Policy, ideas, same thing. We talk about events, of course we talk about people, but in the context of ideas.
Rush Limbaugh, Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back with Tracy Groves, and Tracy's leaving here to go up to Western Maryland. He's got some young hunters coming in there today at his outreach center, which this is your second year, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, so great effort. You're doing what you're supposed to be doing, and I know it's your ministry in life, and that's good. I mean, you do a lot of speaking engagements, mostly at churches and outdoor events around. I think, what'd you tell me, every weekend or something from the first of the year till now, you've done some speaking events.
Yeah,
and things
January like from mid January until last weekend.
Wow.
I was going every weekend doing a speaking engagement at a sportsman's banquet or a seminar somewhere.
Sure.
Or something. And
that's cool.
But I wouldn't change it.
No.
I've got a great wife that supports it and great kids, and it's just what God's called me to do.
As long as you're doing what you're called to do, that's what it's all about. So, okay, so now you want to demonstrate another call that you use. Some reason, you're anxious to use this call.
Yeah, I wasn't real happy with the way that last one sounded.
The reeds were sticking together. You want to rewind a little bit.
And
all right.
It kind of brings up a good point, and I just got done telling somebody this the other day, and here I went and did it anyway. But when you first get your calls out in the morning, the reeds will stick together.
Right.
And what happens is when you try to push air through them, it'll be a different tone. And that's normally not real good. And so what I do is I carry a bottle of water with me, and I try to really loosen up those reeds and get them broke apart before you start to call. So
you don't carry them in your truck and call in your truck before you go in the woods and get them all loosened up that way?
I do once in a while, yeah, but I do carry a bottle of water with me and loosen them up a little bit. But what happens is
a little hard to have a conversation with a diaphragm call in your mouth.
Yeah, and what happens is when you get out of the truck, if it's a cool morning, by the time you get to where you're going, those reeds will stick again.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is once I sit down at the base of the tree, then I'll put the call in my mouth and try to get it moved up and get the reeds to unstick. So since during our break I got them.
You got them unstuck,
unstick,
huh?
So I want to do that one call one more time.
All right.
Before he's in.
And this is the call after the gobbler's flown down from the roost.
Yeah.
You think he's coming to you.
It's just a series of what they call yelps.
Yep.
Yelps and clucks and putts and just, you know.
Kind of mix it up because the turkey doesn't make a.
He don't.
You remember when we hunted on public ground and you told me that the birds were roosting in a set of pine trees.
Hmm.
And we went in and we sat down, and all of a sudden we started to hear the hens.
Yep.
And it did the same thing again. and did the same thing again. Did the same thing again. Yeah. You said, let's go. I said, why? That's a hunter.
Yeah, it wasn't turkey.
No, it wasn't turkey.
No.
No. So. After all, they're like a big chicken.
Well, they're not smarter than a chicken.
How do you know
and
that?
I think they taste better than chicken.
Yeah, they probably do.
But, yeah.
All right, so you've eaten wild turkey.
I have.
Yeah. You prepare it like just like a regular old Thanksgiving turkey?
I do not. What I used to do it that way, and to be honest with you, I didn't care for it a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did was I was in Oklahoma hunting with a gentleman, and he took this Creole butter,
mm-hmm.
and he injected we took the breast out, and he injected this Creole butter into the breast that sat there for about 2 or 3 hours, and then he cut it up into small chunks, nuggets, he's what he called it, and he deep-fried them.
The nuggets. They cut the breast up into nuggets.
Into nuggets, and he deep-fried it in a fish batter.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did that, I ate them, and I was like, oh, my goodness. It
yeah.
put a whole different taste.
Didn't batter
them
or anything else, did
he? Yeah, he battered
oh,
them.
Oh, he battered
them. He battered them in a fish fry.
Mean a batter and then deep-fried them in a batter.
Correct. And just all he did was just put a little bit of oil in the bottom of the pan, and then he just fried them like that. And, man, it was unbelievable.
Oh, it was? Okay, so it wasn't a deep-fryer, turkey-fryer type of thing.
Right, right. It was just in a pan where he just covered, you know, like a quarter inch of the pan with oil.
And then flipped them once.
Flipped them once, and man, it was unbelievable. So now that's how I eat it now.
Okay.
So I don't put it on a grill anymore. I don't try to cook it. Like, you can cook it in a bag, and you can just do the whole thing.
In
an oven bag.
Yeah.
I don't do it that way. I take the breast and I inject a Creole butter in it and then let it sit for a couple hours and cut it up into small nuggets. It's a lot better that way. So
as long as you like it.
Yeah,
I've got a buddy that does turkeys. He deep fries turkeys all the time. I mean, for neighbors, friends, and everything else, you know. And he's got the whole technique down. And you know, we're not getting into technique on deep frying a turkey.
No.
But be safe out there. Turn the flame off before you dunk that turkey, and that's all I'll say about that now. So, but yeah. Okay. Now, our goal is to shoot that turkey. Our goal is to, you know, get that turkey on the ground. So my grandson's using a 20 gauge today. I bought a screw in choke, full turkey choke. And I'm gonna hope that it shoots a tight pattern.
You're gonna hope.
I'm gonna hope it shoots a tight pattern. Yeah.
That means you didn't test it.
That means I didn't. That means I didn't test it and pattern it. You're absolutely right.
That's not good.
I know.
And if he misses,
it's my fault.
It's for probably.
Yeah.
Well, not completely. But
well, I mean, you know.
But we'll blame it on you to make him feel better.
That's right. Exactly right. But yeah, you know, I don't know how far that turkey's gonna be. But yeah. I mean, the boy's a good shot. So.
He, you know, the guns is a really big thing in the turkey woods, and it's probably as important, if not more important than any part of it, Alan, because there is so much difference that can happen between a shell and a turkey, a choke tube, that if you don't shoot them, you wouldn't believe the difference. I had a.
So do I take that out and use a stock choke tube? Use a modifier or something?
No. Some of your choke tubes are tremendous. I mean, I use right now. I use Indian Creek. It's by far the best I've ever found, next to a Hainstein's. Hainstein's the next best that I've personally used.
Okay.
You know,
but
I have
you invest hundreds of dollars in your turkey chokes. Or used to. Anyway.
I used to. Yeah. Well, I was fortunate enough, and you know, because of being involved with Bass Pro. There was a time when I was able to take choke tubes home and test them.
Right.
And so that way I can do seminars and talk about choke tubes. And I still do that, not to the extent, because I've learned, you know, kind of which ones that work best in which guns.
Right.
And, there are a couple choke tubes. No matter what gun you put it in, it performs really well.
I found this choke tube. It was the only choke tube I could find in the region. I didn't order it online or anything like that. I bought it off the shelf. Nobody had a, believe it or not, nobody had a 20-gauge.
Sorry, Alan.
Is that your cell phone?
It's probably my dad, if I'm going to guess.
Well, he wouldn't know you're on the air yet.
No, he wouldn't.
So, I found this choke tube. It was the only choke tube I could find. That's your daughter. in the area, it is a True Glow choke tube. It's the only one that could fit a 20 gauge Remington.
Yeah, True Glow does. They make a good choke tube.
Good.
20 gauge. You know, 20 gauge guns are becoming very popular in the turkey woods. If you do it right, you can get a good 35 to 40 yard pattern out of a 20 gauge. Where 5 years ago, 30 was probably your max.
Yeah.
So right now, I'm shooting the probably my two guns that are the best is my Browning BPS, and I use the old Mossberg 835.
Right.
Both those guns perform very well. The Browning.
I don't like the safety on your Mossberg, by the way.
Yeah, I didn't think you would, but the
cost me a bird, if you recall.
I don't remember that.
So. Let me remind you. We were out.
I don't think that was my gun, was it?
Yeah, that was your gun. I think use mine.
But I think it was the movement taking the safety off. I don't think it was.
No, I think it was the safety. Click when the safety went off.
Yeah, well, you're supposed to have the safety off when they get to before they get to 30 yards.
I was waiting for you to tell me that.
Well, let's move on.
Why? I want to talk about that. Yeah. Anyway, that's all right. Go ahead.
Yeah, so pattern a gun is huge. I mean, I was with a gentleman this past week that has the new Remington 1187, and he's an experienced turkey hunter, and we've shot his new gun in. What we do is the proper way to do it is take a 30 by 30 piece of white paper,
right?
Put a 10-inch circle,
right.
8-inch circle in the middle with like a quarter dot in the middle, and you aim at that dot.
Right.
And he did that, and his pattern was about 12 inches low and to the right. He had probably three BBs in that circle, so it would have harvested the bird at 30 yards, but the core of his pattern was completely off.
Wow.
And so we had to adjust. We had to adjust that, and unfortunately, on that gun, without a scope or a red dead ringer sight or a True Glow or something adjustable, he's going to have to learn how to adjust that in the woods.
So he's going to have to hold high and to the left to kill that bird.
So
where do you aim?
We tried different chokes with different shells to see if it changed, because it will change. Mm-hmm. But on that particular gun, it did not
change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I aim at the wattles.
The wattles is right below the head.
Right below the head.
That mass of flesh.
Yeah, that's where I aim, and that way the pattern covers that entire area.
Yeah, breaks the neck.
What happens is a lot of guys will aim just at the head, and if you happen to pull out of the shot, you'll shoot over top of them.
Right.
So what I do is I aim for the wattles, and that way it covers the whole thing.
But, right. I've patterned my turkey gun at your place.
Yeah, the new you know.
With the scope.
I shoot a scope now as well.
Yeah.
I do. Both my guns have scopes on them. Leopold makes a turkey gun. It's an NWTF turkey gun where it has a little round circle. Mm-hmm. It has a circle inside the scope, and basically you just take that circle and put it on the waddle. And how I did that was my oldest daughter Ashley. She kept missing birds, and she's a phenomenal hunter and great shot. And I was like, man, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And I watched her one time. Whenever she shot, she pulls her head up to see if she hits
the bird.
She keeps shooting over top. So
guys do that deer hunting too.
A lot.
Yeah.
And so we put a scope on it for somebody told me, try it. So I put it on her gun and let her try it. And man, right on the money, she harvested everything she shot at from there on. And so I had lent my gun out. It was being worked on. And I used her gun one time. And a bird came in and some heavy briars, and I could see them through the scope. But when I took my eye out of the scope, I couldn't find the bird. I could see the bird, but I couldn't see his head. And so I'm watching this bird through the scope, and his head went into a hole. And I pulled my head out of the scope, and I couldn't find it.
Right.
And I put my head back in the scope, and there was his head right in this pure open hole. And I squeezed the trigger and harvested that bird. And the more and more I used the scope, the more and more I got, I like it. And, you know, guys say, well, what happens if you miss and they get up running or flying?
Shoot them again. Just use like a shotgun.
You shoot them again, and it's only a 3 power.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like that you've got a real tunnel vision. And what I did was just to see if I could, I shot clay birds with it.
Mm-hmm.
I take it out with a scope, and I shoot clay birds with the scope in that, and it really allows you to hone your skill. So I put scopes on both my guns now, and Mark Hoke uses a scope on his gun. And a lot of guys are using red dots now because of the pattern situation where we're going to be right. So I have really liked doing the scope. It's changed, you know, everything for me. You just can't. You got to be careful when you're looking through the scope that you don't shoot prematurely, because the birds will look a little closer than what they actually are.
Yeah, well, that's good to have a rangefinder too.
Yes. Yeah. The new Winchester Longbeard that is out, that shell, phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Does a great job. I have found that the heavy shot number six is 2.25 ounce load, and Longbeard are probably the two primary shells that I'll shoot now. Mm-hmm. And no matter what choke tube I
have
put in.
Have you priced heavy shot lately?
I have. It's $34 for 5 shots.
Yeah.
Now there's
a lot of guys are would be a little bit averse to that.
I agree, and I used to be, mm-hmm. and I think the Longbeard that's coming out that's $20 mm-hmm. for 10 shots.
Mm-hmm.
I just shot my guns with those shells this past week, and I'll continue to shoot the heavy shot.
Right.
But when they're gone, I probably will switch to a Longbeard. There was only a 5 BB difference in my patterns.
Right.
So but the heavy shot, the thing I look about is if you're going to Kansas or somewhere like that for, you know, a turkey and you have a shot, you know, that shell performs the way it does, is it worth spending a few extra dollars?
I think it's worth spending a few extra dollars.
I do. But the Winchester Longbeard, it's a good shell.
Yep.
Very good shell.
All right. Well, Trace, we're going to take our final break here of the day. And are we done, John? We're done?
Yep.
All right. Well, then I'll say, Trace, thank you very much. Much success on your outreach with the kids this weekend. And we hope you have a successful turkey season. I'm sure we'll be talking sometime in the next couple of weeks. And
sure. Appreciate it, Alan. Thanks for having me in today. And I hope you and your grandson have a special day in the woods, seeing another sunrise and hearing a turkey gobble, and hopefully be able to put him on the ground.
That's the idea. Thanks, buddy.
Oh, thank you.
All right, folks. Time for me to say get out, stay out, stay safe.